Well, I'd like to, first of all, welcome everybody on behalf of the Crick Jacobs Center for Theoretical and Computational Biology here at the Salk Institute. When I first came to the Salk Institute in 1990, one of the wonderful pleasures of being here, not just the Pacific Ocean, was the fact that Francis was here. And Francis loved to come over to the lab at tea time, and we would have free-ranging discussions on many areas of science, but one of his favorites was sleep. And he had very strong ideas about sleep, in fact, published a paper with Graham Mitchison on a theory for what might be happening during sleep, what was one possible explanation he thought might be unlearning, that you're unlearning things that might otherwise interfere with your ability to learn and remember things. And later became interested in consciousness, and I realized that these are two areas that we know probably the least about in science. They are at the fringes of the frontier. How does the brain work? Why do we sleep? What is consciousness? These are very, very big questions, and science is right on the threshold of finally having the tools and techniques to actually approach these questions in a rigorous way. I first became interested in sleep research in 1990 because of a chance encounter with a sleep researcher, Mircea Steriad, at the in Quebec at University of Laval. And it's been a pleasure over the last 16 years to see sleep from the inside, to see how the field ticks. And 3 years ago, I was one of the co-organizers with Martha Gillette of a small workshop that was sponsored by the National Academy of Sciences through the Keck Initiative to bring together researchers from a wide range of backgrounds, many of them meeting each other for the first time, to try to understand how all the different biological clocks in our bodies, in our brains, work together. And one of the results from our discussion was the fact that we've discovered that there were many, many points of commonality between people coming from neuroscience, from endocrinology, from the circadian field, from the sleep field. And part of the reason why I think these groups don't really often get together is the fact that we come from different backgrounds, societies, and in fact tribes, communities working together. Now, to put things in perspective, in trying to understand the brain, but this could apply as well to the body if we just replace neurons with cells, it's clear that we really have to integrate across all these different levels from the molecular up to the central nervous system. Sleep as a behavior, of course, is something that takes place at the very top. The whole body and the whole brain interact. But within the brain, there are many systems, and within each system, there are networks of neurons that control the different functions of the brain, and ultimately specific neurons and specific connections between them. If one, again, wants to understand a very complex system, it's often easier to start with a simpler system. And in the words of Dobzhansky, nothing in biology can be understood except in the light of evolution. And what emerged from this meeting that that we organized at the National Academy of Sciences was a common point of reference. And the point of reference was our origin, because life began in a single cell. It was only much, much later that complex organs developed, multicellular animals. But one of the things that all cells here on the Earth needed to do was to interact with the environment, and one of the most salient features of the environment is the fact that there's night and day. Single-cell creatures have metabolic cycles. Single-cell creatures have cycles of cell division during which DNA is synthesized, for example, during one phase of the cell cycle, and then the cell splits into two and continues. And it turns out that these are very tightly coupled. The metabolic cycle and the DNA cycle are very tightly coupled because it's during the day that the cell is using energy to for oxidation, for creating energy, and it's during the night when the cell becomes more reduced that DNA synthesis takes place, which would be very dangerous in an oxidized environment. So these two are coupled. Now, in addition to this daily cycle, we all have a circadian cycle that is also synced to the light. In fact, every cell in our body has this circadian cycle that all the cells have to be coordinated together. Now, one of the things that has really unified these different branches, and by the way, the people who study cell cycle, by and large, don't talk to the people who study circadian clocks, and these people, in turn, don't talk to the people who work on metabolic cycle. But what we discovered is that there are specific molecules, and at the meeting, we discovered that we were all talking about the same molecules, and one of the most important turns out to be the period gene, which is essential part of the circadian clock cycle. It's a transcription factor that binds the DNA, and it helps coordinate the daily rhythm that all of the clocks in our body partake in. And it turns out that the very same period gene is involved in cell cycle, and that is also controlled by the metabolic state of the cell. Now, what does this all have to do with sleep? Well, sleep is very closely tied to the circadian rhythm, and I want to illustrate that with this particular experiment that was done on hamsters. So hamsters are nocturnal animals. They're active during the night, and this experiment consists of 40 nights, 40 days, in which the cage was dark during 8 hours of the day, and then it was light during the rest of the day. And shortly after the lights go out, hamsters love to go on the exercise wheel. They're active during the night. Now, at the 12th day, the dark cycle was shifted forward 3 hours. And you'll notice that on the very first day after it was shifted, the hamster actually is getting up and working on the exercise wheel in the light. And it takes 3 days before the hamster shifts over and now is entrained to the new light cycle. And, of course, we're all familiar with this when we go off to the East Coast and experience this jet lag. But here's something even more interesting. Suppose we just take the light off completely and just leave the hamster in the dark, keep the temperature constant. If we do that, we discover that the hamster continues to cycle, but no longer is synced to the light. And in fact, if you look at the daily shift, it's about 1 hour. It's clear that this hamster is running on a 25-hour internal clock. This was an experiment, by the way, that was done on humans by Chuck Seisler, who is here at the meeting, and will tell us a very elegant experiment where humans were put in dark caves and similarly let to run free. Now, a critical experiment can be done to try to test what is it that's allowing the both hamsters and humans to be to have this internal clock of daily activity and to be entrained to the sun. And there's a specific nucleus in the brain called the suprachiasmatic nucleus, or SCN. You'll be hearing more about that later. And it gets an input from the retina, which means it has a light signal from a very interesting source, you'll hear. And if you lesion that nucleus, you completely disrupt this internal rhythm. Now the running on the wheel becomes disrupted in terms of fragmentation. There's no longer any sign of periodicity. And it's clear that this is a very important nucleus in the brain, which helps orchestrate the rest of the circuits, the rest of the behavioral responses. And this is really, I think, a very important observation and a clue to how parts of our brain help to coordinate activity in other parts of the brain and control the changes that occur, the vast changes that occur when we fall asleep. Sleep is really just an absolutely fascinating field, and I'm really looking forward to all of the discussion that we're going to have over the next day and a half. I think that you'll see that some of the big questions like why we sleep are still as mysterious as ever, but some of the pieces of the puzzle are now on the table, and I think for the first time we can begin to put them together. So I want to thank you all and look forward to the next set of talks. The next talk is going to be Jerry Siegel, and I think, Roger, do you want to introduce Jerry or should I? Okay, well, it looks like Roger has temporarily disappeared. Jerry Siegel is at UCLA. He is a sleep researcher who is interested in questions having to do with how all animals sleep. How do we compare different species? And in particular, he'll be telling us about some of the basic features of sleep that have been discovered over the year, over the many years, and where we are today in the sleep field. Jerry.
I actually hadn't...